Hello.
Hello. So, John, this is Alana. I'm going to be moderating the call today.
Okay.
And we have about 13 riders on the line. They've all been prepped for the call. And the first person you're going to be speaking with is Elizabeth with the Murray State News.
Okay.
And Elizabeth, go ahead and ask your first question for John.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Basically, one of the first things I've always wanted to ask you is, if you could only listen to one album for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Well, this is a very common question that comes up between friends and colleagues alike. Can it be a greatest hits record, or is that cheating?
Absolutely. Oh, totally. Go for the compilation.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who's going to give me the best in all in one. It would have to be somebody who encompassed all different styles. I would say probably Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life.
Very nice. Very nice. And yeah, kind of along the same vein, if you could only play one town, let's keep it in the U.S. for the sake of argument, for
right.
the rest of your touring career, what would it be and why?
New York. Probably New York City. It'd be cool if Times Square could have somewhat of a Vegas feel where you could just keep playing shows in Times Square. I think it'd be cool to kind of go home every night in New York. Do, you know, because the Broadway vibe, kind of like the Broadway idea.
Yeah.
Where you can both be a performer on stage, but also, you know, have a dog and an apartment and a weekend, you know.
Totally, totally. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. So, John, the next person you're going to be speaking with is Whitney with the Kentucky Colonel. And Whitney, go ahead and ask a question for John.
Hey, John, how are you doing?
Good. How you doing, Whitney?
Rolling Stone just named you one of the guitar gods, and I was wondering, how does that feel?
Well, it feels great. As long as I don't want to, as long as I suppress the need to argue back, it feels, I mean, obviously that is a very external sort of applied thing for someone else to say. It's certainly not the lexicon that I would use in my mind, but I can't deny the fact that it's quite a thrill, you know.
And kind of on the same line, like, who would be your guitar god?
Oh, you know, they're not new. They wouldn't be the new guitar gods. They're the same ones for the last 40 years. But the thing about it is they're maybe so truly godly, quote unquote, which of course none of them would have ever wanted to have heard either. But so densely impacting that they're still just as vital today as they were when they first hit the scene, you know. I mean, if anything's going to make something a guitar god, or somebody a guitar god, I think it would be some 15-year-old kid 40, 50 years later picking up the music and still being moved by it, you know.
All right. Thank you, Whitney. And, John, you're going to be talking to Michelle now with the Grand Valley Lanthorn. Michelle, talk to John.
Hi, Michelle.
How you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm wondering what song you would consider your most overrated and underrated song.
Oh, that's a great question. Overrated. People saying, I love that tune, and me going, do you really?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the songs that aren't on my albums that people like to request at shows. People think that I don't put songs on my records because, you know... Well, actually, I don't know why they think I don't, but they usually don't go on records because they're not very good. And I think people like the songs that they don't hear a lot, and they become kind of like cult little favorites that people love. But I'll be fair, there's something that's on the record. I'm trying to think, what would be a song that everybody kind of go, really? You know, I don't totally love My Stupid Mouth.
Okay.
It's always been a little bit, it's maybe one of the least melodic, one of the least satisfying songs for me, melodically. I wish I could have written that one better. And the underrated, definitely there's a song called Wheel on Heavier Things, the last song on Heavier Things. And I think if that had been saved until Continuum, it would have gone red on Continuum. It probably would have survived the 2 or 3 years between Heavier Things and Continuum and still gone on it.
And my second question would be, what do you think is the worst stereotype you receive by being a so-called rock star?
Well, I could use some more rock star stereotypes. It's the kind of singer-songwriter stereotype, you know. What's the stereotype? I don't know. I mean, I think I don't know. We know that I would even call it a stereotype. I think it would just be a side effect of the messages that you're most famous for putting across. I mean, I put 12 songs across every record, and there's only really one or two that get heard by a really widespread of people. And it wouldn't be a stereotype, but it would be like, oh, well, you just heard that one song out of 12. You hope that people can hear all 12 and get a full understanding. But if there was, so I guess the stereotype of sensitive bedwetter.
You know. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
John, next you're going to be speaking with Thomas with the Northern Star. Thomas, go ahead and ask a question for John.
Hi, John. Thanks for talking to us today.
My pleasure.
You were on Conan O'Brien, May of 2006, and you got to perform Sweet Home Chicago during one of his Chicago
shows. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Did you get to spend some time in Chicago?
I don't believe I had that much time on that day, but I somehow end up in Chicago quite a bit, actually. Every two or three months, I end up, there's something that takes me to Chicago, and it's always cool to get there. I stopped actually on the way to Miami from LA to start the rehearsals for this tour we're on now. I stopped by Buddy Guy's Legends in Chicago, and
oh, cool.
Had another night in Chicago, which is great.
Cool.
So it's just one of those stars on the map we just end up hitting all the time.
Cool. Do you consider Conan's brand of humor to be something that you would like to emulate for your own stand-up comedy?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how much of his humor makes it into stand-up territory.
Mm.
It's more, I mean, to me, the perfect thing would be to be like, if I could do stand-up the way Conan does a show. I mean, because really what his funniest stuff is responding to, he's a great reactor.
Yeah.
That really is his greatest talent. I mean, the thing about Conan is that it doesn't matter who the guest is.
Mm.
You know, it's going to be Conan's reaction to whatever's said that's funniest, you know.
One last question for you. Did you get to jam with Conan afterward?
No, I've never jammed with Conan.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, but, you know, it could happen. I'm on the show enough that it may happen one day.
Excellent.
It all depends what the writers want.
Okay.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you.
So, John, next you're going to be speaking with Blake with the Daily Illini?
Illini, Daily Illini.
Illini, thank you. Please, Blake, go ahead and ask a question.
All right.
John.
Thanks again, John, for talking to us today.
You got it.
I guess my question has to deal with Continuum. I noticed that a couple of the songs are a little more socially issue-driven, and I was going to ask, are you going to be writing or showing more music in that, like, sphere, kind of like how, you know, Bob Dylan and pretty much everyone did?
I don't know. I can only write about what I feel justified in writing about. I wouldn't have felt justified in writing about a political climate 5 years ago, because quite frankly, 5 years ago the political climate was very different, and now it has kind of rolled into somewhat more of a lifestyle situation that a songwriter could write about easier. You know, I think the days of political singers singing about political things, and you know, I think that delineation is kind of past us. I think it's such, I mean, you can't be on a treadmill or go to a bar or get in a cab without being confronted with it. And at that point, it's almost not even a politic. At that point, it's almost a cultural element, you know. And I'll only, I think, feel the need to write about cultural elements. And I think certainly Waiting on the World to Change and Belief touch on two kind of emotional quotients more than they do talk about anything on a logistical level.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Blake. John, next you're going to be speaking with Amanda with the Suffolk Journal. Amanda, go ahead and ask your first question for John.
Hi, John. I'm calling from Boston, so I'm somewhat obligated to ask about Berkeley.
Absolutely.
It seems like everyone kind of has a horror story, like, oh, I hate that guy, or someone has a great story. So you were only there for two semesters, and it seems like you made a big impact on the student body. What was your time like there?
I thought you were going to ask me, like, the tapes rolling, who do you hate?
I mean, I've got names, I mean.
No, I don't know how much of an impact I made while I was there. I think certainly being a Berkeley, well, I wouldn't say alum, although Berkeley is probably one of the most lax schools in terms of who they consider an alumni, you know. I mean, I went for a year, and I almost feel like reminding them of that, you know, or at least reminding the students of that, that I did go for a year, and I did not finish, and I did have a great time there, but... you know, I don't think the effect was had when I was there. I think that's what's so interesting about going to a place like that. No matter what you've got brewing, you're in an incredibly kind of, not sterile, but, look, guitar players are sand at the beach at Berklee College of Music, so. But my time there was great. I think the greatest teachings I ever got were from other students, you know. And I think that's what the strong point of Berklee is anyway.
My other question was about the stand-up comedy. It seems like you're branching out and doing a lot of different things, and especially with design and the whole sneaker thing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like people kind of get crazy and do tons of different things and they kind of forget about their music, or is that...
Yeah, I certainly don't, I don't have a fear. I do think it happens sometimes. I'm not sure as to what the variables are in keeping it from not happening. But I think I stay in the spotlight of music enough that, I mean, these other pursuits are actually all meant to kind of funnel back into music anyway. Stand-up comedy is just a faster song and more of them, you know. Songwriting and comedy are the same. You're distilling an idea into a sentiment that can affect people the easiest and the most. And they're very similar, and I certainly don't have any desire to put the moniker of musician behind anything else. I don't think I ever would. And stand-up comedy thing is basically what I do at night when I'm home. So it's almost a private pursuit, except for the fact that it's on stage in front of 80-100 people.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next you're going to be speaking with Jessica at the Northeastern News.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm just wondering, what's it like being on the road all the time? Like, do you miss going home, or does it bother you sometimes that you don't see your friends for months?
It doesn't bother me that I don't see my friends for months, because I have friends on the road, and the friends that I do have, I'm able to keep in touch with. What's that?
Like family, then.
Yeah, family. Look, I'll always be. That's one of the, you know, since the beginning of the wheel, when people could, you know, before then, when people were running into the woods to kill boar, they were missing their family. You know, that's just a part of it. What I've learned in my life, it's very interesting social study for me to go back and forth between being the guy at home and being the guy on the road and being the guy in the studio and being the guy in an interview. The environment around you has so much to do with your character. And when I'm home, my character really changes quite a bit. I'm kind of very domesticated, and it becomes riding my bike and kind of the music thing. The music thing doesn't leave, but the kind of what's put upon me from other people as a musician, the view of me kind of disappears, and I get more stable emotionally, I get happier, I get, you know, going out on the road when it's a different hotel room every night and blah, 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 all that boring stuff that people talk about on the road, you rely on a different part of yourself to make it through. So there's a little bit of a barreling through that happens on the road just because you're trying to get to the next city, play that show well, and get to the next city. And when you're home, you can just kind of rely on the comfort more, you know.